Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club. And boy, am I happy to have y'all in this meeting. Now, I am very excited about this week's guest speaker. His name is Sekou Andrews, and he's known for something called poetic voice. It's a genre of presentation, a type of art form, really, that he's developed that combines public speaking with poetry in interesting ways that combine art and oftentimes business. He goes around speaking for lots of corporate clients and nonprofit clients like TCEA. In fact, we recorded this interview with our guest speaker, Sekou Andrews, at this year's TCEA Convention and Exposition, where he was our opening keynote speaker. Now, I can see some of your eyes starting to glaze over, wondering, what am I going to learn from this discussion? Well, if that's the case, I really want you to keep listening. And if you're listening to this episode when it's new, when it first comes out, you're probably dealing with the challenge of remote teaching right now. Now, we're not going to jump into a lot of tech tools in this episode, but we are going to talk about ways you can inspire and engage your students, even when they are separated from you by a screen. So if you're logging on each morning or you're walking into a classroom and you're wondering, how am I going to keep people engaged? How am I going to reach their interests? And how will I get that to translate into lasting learning? Well, this is the right episode for you. We're going to talk about acting, comedy, slam poetry, and of course, teaching. Sekou Andrews was once a classroom teacher. All of that is covered in our discussion. And it all starts right now. Hey, everybody, welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA. And this week, as I said, our guest speaker is Sekou Andrews, renowned and Grammy-nominated poetic voice. He was our keynote speaker at our TCEA Convention and Exposition this year, and that's when we recorded this episode of the podcast, right before he went on stage. So, without any further ado, our talk with Sekou Andrews. Poetic voice is your medium. You're a performer and an artist and an entrepreneur, and you've kind of invented a fusion of many different styles. So if we're thinking of an artist, a visual artist, we might think mixed media art, right? This is almost the performance or presentation equivalent of that, something like that, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. It's, mixed media. I use the analogy also mixed martial arts. You know, it's taking inspirational speaking and seamlessly blending it with spoken word poetry. But in the process of doing that, it's infused with storytelling and theater and comedy and sometimes improv, but also thought leadership and actionable takeaways and, you know, like a TED Talk. So sometimes it feels like a TED Talk. Sometimes it feels like a story. Sometimes it feels like Hamilton, you know, and sometimes it feels like an executive keynote. And the critical word is seamless, because there are artists who give talks, who are speakers. A lot of times they perform and then they speak and then perform and speak. And I wanted to create a seamless experience where you just didn't know where one ends and the next begins. So every time you're ready to check out, it switches and it creates this sort of constant leaning in effect for an audience where they find themselves going, like I just had someone tell me the other day, she was like, I feel like my butt hurts because I was on the edge of my seat for like 60 minutes and that's never happened. And that's what I wanted to achieve. Just when she was ready to lean back, something new made her lean in.
You know, when I look at what you've done and your performances, you come from a background, acting, music, performance, and teaching. So you've been, and of course, you've built your own business.
Yeah.
So you have all these different tools at your disposal, and you're really combining all of it. I think it's almost a little hard to describe sometimes what you do. But you mentioned, like, Hamilton is a good example, right? Like, there is a sense of poetry to that that's a little different than your standard Broadway show. And that's because of the hip-hop influence. So, I mean, do you feel, and we know that a good speaker has a cadence, has a rhythm, has an energy, right? But
not all speakers can keep you on the edge of your seat. Yeah. So when you think about giving a presentation, you go, you learn about an organization, you get all your talking points, essentially. Where does it grow from there into a performance?
So, yeah, I love hearing that, you know, when you say a good speaker has a sense of cadence and rhythm and so forth, because this is really just that on steroids, you know? This is taking what is normally executed in standard oration and public speaking, but then looking at the performance element, right? That's actually why I started my speaker training program, was because I realized I had a successful career as a public speaker, but had never been trained as a public speaker. All of my training was performance training. So when people were sort of talking to me, my team was looking at what programs we were going to create, I didn't really have a desire to create a public speaking training program, because I felt that there were so many out there. There's plenty of good ones. But then I realized, well, that's my sort of unique access point, right? Is that how is it that I not only just execute on stage as a performer, but even how do I approach the stage as a performer? It's very different. I don't know if you were just listening. I was talking to Holly and to some of the executives, and they were noticing how I was, you know, shaking the podium, and I was hopping on and off the stage, and I was doing these things, and they didn't really understand them. And I was telling them it's because a performer approaches the stage like, once I'm on stage, everything is mine. I own this place, right? So every chair, every podium, every stair, every level, every light, all of it could possibly become a part of the experience that I create. So I want to make sure I check and test all of that, because I don't know where I'm going to go, but I don't want to be restricted in where I go. And that's a difference in the way that a performer approaches compared to a speaker, who is sort of like, as long as I got my slides, as long as I got my script memorized and so forth, then I'm good, right? A performer is really looking at, how am I going to harness the energy? How am I going to maximize these rhythms and these cadences? How am I going to use all of these techniques, these acting techniques and songwriter techniques and improv techniques, comedy, theater, all of that to galvanize the audience in a new way? And so I think that, you know, going back to your question in terms of moving from the initial contact with the client to what it is that I deliver, I'm always trying to take the business message and create a human experience around it. So I start off similar to how many speakers start off. I do a due diligence call, insight call, and gather some information. My calls go much deeper though. You know, a lot of speakers might do a 15, 20 minute call. Hey, here's who I am. Here's what I'm going to talk about. What are the key things you want me to kind of, you know, slip in there? But for me, I start asking, you know, about fears and challenges and hopes and dreams. And like, I need to hear the humanity of the topic, the humanity of the industry. And then I take all that information and I go away and I start trying to find what's the sort of universal thread. What's the human story underneath all of that? What are the human beings in the audience want? Not the executives, not the teachers, not the cloud computing folks or doctors or shoe salespeople, whoever they are. But what do the human beings need to hear, to discover, to learn, et cetera, to feel? And once I find that, once I decided on the presentation that's going to deliver that, then I go back and I say, now here's the business messaging that I need to get in there, right? I call that the client bling, right? Because it's like the shiny stuff that makes them go, oh my gosh, this is our industry, you know? But by the time I get to the client bling, I've already activated them and engaged them as human beings. So they're already mine, right? And now they just feel a sense of relevance to their industry as well. So it's a different approach, kind of a more artistic approach to trying to have them leave feeling like I told their story in a way that showed them the best version of themselves. Mm.
And, you know, it's interesting you talk about working, you know, into the humanity of a topic or an industry. Some industries, I won't name any names, might be harder.
Yes.
Teaching is a little different. There's an inbuilt humanity. And there's an interesting aspect, too, about you know, this notion that there's no way to copy paste a Sekou Andrews presentation, right? It would never work in a different, even in a different physical space, yep. Certainly not for a different industry, right? When you think, and you have experience as a teacher, of course, so yep. When you think about that perspective, if I'm a teacher listening and I have to get up in front of 30 kids every day, I have to hold their attention, I have to improvise a lot of times, I know my topics, I know what I'm talking about, but I'm always adjusting yep. To every student, to every moment, to every year or unit. What advice would you give from what you do, from how you present and perform? What can teachers take from that?
There are two places that I feel like were incredible training grounds for what it is that I do. One was, maybe three. One was a tour that I did for TV filmmaker Norman Lear, traveled the country with an original print of the Declaration of Independence and inspired over a million youth to vote. But it was a nonpartisan tour. So we couldn't say, vote for this person or this person, vote for this issue or this issue. It just had to be, get active, right? And Norman was like, I want you to get them swearing to everything that they believe, but can't talk about the issues. Right. That was a great training ground for what it is that I do now. The second thing is slam. Slam. You know, if you're familiar with a poetry slam, if you're not, you should go to a local poetry slam. Austin has some great ones. I know there are a bunch in throughout Texas as well. And it's basically like a poetry night, except the poets compete on this particular night. 3-minute original poems, no props, no costumes, and 5 random judges are selected from audience members. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the poem, they throw up their scorecards. And so it turns poetry into sport, and it makes for a really kind of energetic night. But the challenge is you as a poet don't get to just, you know, share your deep soliloquy to a daffodil and have everyone go, oh, that was so beautiful. No, it's like you got some person that just came to watch the game and now they have a scorecard in their hand. So you've got to convert them. You've got to impress them, right? And that was a great training ground for coming into corporate America, coming into audiences where they're not expecting to like me and being able to convert them. And the last was teaching. Or the first, really, for me, was teaching. Like, teachers have an amazing training ground for public speaking. We have one of the toughest stages there is. You have an audience that you have to impress every day. And they don't care what you did yesterday. They don't care how impressive you were yesterday. That is in the past, right? Mm-hmm. Impress me today. Engage me today. Keep my attention today. Inspire me today. And that's, you know, however many days of the year that teacher was in that classroom, and that audience is in constant growth and evolution. And so the way that you reach them in June might be different than the way that you reach them in September or in January, you know? And so I really feel like teachers need to take advantage of that, right? To recognize that, to pay attention to what it is that you're doing to engage your audience. A lot of times I know teachers that get terrified when they're speaking in front of a big room of adults or a small room. And I'm like, are you kidding? Like, do you know how easy this audience is compared to the audience that you work with every day? Especially if you're a middle school teacher. So it's just, you know, sometimes we have these walls that we put up between our various experiences. And we need to break them down and recognize the connection between them, because they are, that's literally what I'm doing. When I'm speaking to, you know, diabetes healthcare professionals on Monday and cloud computing on Tuesday and women's shoe salespeople on Wednesday and then, you know, educators on Thursday, like I always have to go in sort of digging beneath the differences to find the sameness. And that's what I think teachers can do as you're speaking to adult audiences, is to remember what it is that you do to engage your children, because all these adults are grown-up children in suits. And a lot of times as an audience, they end up having the same challenges and problems and distractions and, you know, all of that that you're dealing with in the classroom. So start paying attention to how it is that you engage as a teacher and recognize you've got one of the best training grounds on earth for public speaking. And then beyond that, like, remember the same way that you show up to class every day to serve, and you go, that's what pushes you through those tough days. The same is true. You know, when I left that stage to come to these stages, I still show up on those hard days and go, somebody here needs to hear this. Like, this is going to be life-changing for someone, and I don't know who that person is, and it may be all 1,500 or 10,000 of these people, and it might just be three, you know? But what fuels me is when those three come up to me later, 5 years later, and say, I saw you in Australia, and you blew my mind, and after that, I created my own business, and now I'm here at this conference because of that business, seeing you speak, and I'm able to share this story with you. Like, when you get that, when you're inspired by the inspiration that you gave, that's what makes it all worthwhile.
And there's a, you know, like a spiral almost, right? Because that person now is equipped to go inspire others, right?
Yeah. Inspiration is circular. It's one of the concepts I'm working on in the book that I'm writing that's about the power of inspiration. And one of the concepts is just making sure that you stay inspired in order to be inspiring, because that circular nature is going to be the ripple effect.
Yeah. I think what's the expression I've heard before? Interested people are interesting.
That's
or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
Only boring people get bored.
That that's right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's very interesting that you pointed to these examples of like the slam world and teaching. And I think those are really interesting to what you do and to what a teacher does in general, because, you know, with that slam competition, like a traditional poetry award, you know, there's a distinguished jury of learned poets who have credentials. They know what makes a good poem. They have a tick list where they can decide whether this is good or not. When you go to the bar and it's poetry night, and they're going up there and somebody has pulled you in to judge a poem, which you probably don't know anything about poetry, the only metric is whether it affected
you. That's it.
And with students, the only metric is whether you reach them. We're here talking about a million different ways that teachers can engage students and communities. They're not all going to work for everyone. And you can't predict. You can't predict who lives in your community. You can't predict who shows up in your classroom. But you have to be able to connect with those people, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's it. It's literally, you know, I'm laughing because every slam poet or poet that's competed in a slam, you know, has all felt the same thing, which is like, I just delivered this, you know, just an amazing, impeccably written and crafted piece that was moving about this struggle that I went through and this the overcoming and the victory, and I got beat by the burrito poem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because the burrito poem was fun and everyone
loved it, right? And the judge is just like, I like burritos. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's it. Like, I like burritos. And so, like, that's where you go, okay, so I have to kind of get off my high horse and let go of some of my credentials and my expertise and my technical proficiency. And I have to understand what the human being needed at that particular moment so that I can stay nimble enough to serve that.
Yeah. You know? Did you ever have a day like that in teaching where you were like, I went up, I nailed it. I did exactly what I was supposed to do today. And they didn't seem to care.
A day.
Sorry, we
had
days that end with a Y.
Yeah, right? Seriously. Yeah, I think that that's a common experience. I mean, I can't even, right now, you know, my teaching experience is so far in my past that there's not a particular day that I'm thinking of right now. I'm sure I'll wake up three nights from now and be like, this is what I should have told Andrew. but the, you know, what really comes to mind is just the succession of those days, right? Because it's a learning process, you know? I mean, and it's not even just the days that happened, but it's the students, you know? It's man, I killed it, but I didn't reach her, you know? Or he is just still not engaged. There was no breakthrough. I still can't crack through that wall. And that could take the half the year, if not the entire year, for you to just keep chipping away at that and finding different entry points to be able to break through in order to give that student the breakthrough. And I think there are plenty of times when it's like, how did that not work for you? It worked for everyone else, you know? And again, that's parallel to the stages that I'm on now. I very much, as a performer, I'm aware of the audience energy, right? There's no fourth wall up for me. So I'm always paying attention to, again, that circular nature of inspiration, that circular nature of energy. I'm giving you energy, and I'm also being fed by your energy. And so I'm looking, and I'm going, okay, cool. I got you, you know. Got you. All right. You're on the fence. I'm coming back for you. You know, oh, I just saw the light bulb, you know, hit your above your head. Awesome. You're hopeless. I'm not going to worry about you, you know, and you're just like literally watching. And there's always going to be that person that no matter what you do, they're just sitting there, arms crossed, and everybody else is dancing in the aisles and standing ovation and cheering and crying. And that person is just sitting there, dead, stoic face, arms crossed, you know, looking like they're just dying a slow death and can't wait to leave you. And what I've also learned is that sometimes that person hated it and there was nothing that you could do. And sometimes that person is the person that comes up to me afterwards and says, that was life-changing for me. And I'm like, you need to work on your life-changing face because that you apparently failed that class, but thank you anyway, you know. And I think that's, you know, again, that's the teaching experience is that you never know when and how you reach. And so you have to just keep trying to reach them.
So that's a lesson for any educators listening that world-class performer, Grammy-nominated, who performs for titans of industry and world leaders and Oprah, still knows that there's going to occasionally be that, you know, guy with the arms folded in the back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Be okay with that. And again, like, I can't get fixated on that person because, like I said, if I'm there to serve, then I have to go. I showed up. And I served who I needed to serve. And then also realizing it could have been that person that got served as well. It's like the same way if you sitting back and seeing someone on their phone during your presentation. And I had to learn. First, I would be like, oh, gosh, I'm not connecting. And then that's the person that comes up to me and shows me 20 things that they tweeted.
I live tweeted the whole
thing. Right, the whole thing. You know what I mean? And you were like, oh, that was you being engaged. So, yeah, you know, stay open to it. But just show up and serve.
Well, that's excellent. I'm not going to take up any more of your time, but thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, that's it for our discussion with Sekou Andrews. I hope you all enjoyed that. I hope the discussion opened up some ideas for you, especially if you're worried about teaching remotely, engaging with students. And speaking of remote learning resources, that leads us to your homework this week. I want you to check out a new page TCEA put together, a kind of digital hub for remote teaching resources. We've got video sessions on how to use popular tools like Zoom and Google, but we're also talking about the big ideas and implementing effective pedagogy using technology tools, especially right now when so many of us are making the transition to remote teaching. Plus, it connects to our Tech Notes blog, all the useful articles there about remote teaching, and of course, to our podcast, as well as daily coffee discussions coming up and daily webinars. Check it all out. The URL is tcea.org/remote learning. tcea.org/remote learning. That's your homework, but if you want to earn a little extra credit, of course, write us at podcast.tcea.org. Tell us what it's like for you to keep a class engaged. And if you've got tips on how to do it right now when we're learning digitally, well, those are helpful too. Again, if you've got good ideas, send it to podcast.tcea.org. We'll give you a shout out on a future episode and you'll get a little extra credit. Of course, keep up with the latest from TCEA. Follow us on social media. Just look for TCEA, especially on Twitter, Facebook. We're on Pinterest, too. Check out Instagram as well. We're there, and it's a great way to keep in touch and learn the latest in educational technology. Okay, we're out of time for this meeting, but we will be back again next week with another meeting of the Ed Tech Club. Until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.